miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And this is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. You're listening to Joe Galuski and Mike Roizen. We're coming live to you today, as usual. The story I wanted to cover next is what killed Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers, it turns out, that was in for a routine, what was called a routine scoping of her vocal cords. Now, none of us ever wanted to do scoping of vocal cord anesthesia when I was back in anesthesiology, because in those days, you didn't have fiber optic scopes, meaning you didn't have very thin scopes that were flexible, so you used rigid scopes, and it was tough to ventilate through them. Now you can put a endotracheal tube down, and you can keep visualizing that while you put a fiber optic scope down. But what the docs did, and apparently they were two experienced docs, I don't know it, I don't know what resuscitation they had, I don't know how well they managed things, apparently went back to the rigid scope to do a biopsy. So when you have a flexible scope in, you can't do the biopsy. You've got to do the biopsy through a rigid scope. And for some reason, they went to cut off something on her vocal cords. I don't know whether she had agreed to this or not, but she probably did, had signed for it. And when they did that, her vocal cords went into spasm, and they lost her airway, meaning they couldn't ventilate her. When the vocal cords have some blood on it and go into spasm, you get only one chance to breathe for the patient before they get brain damage. That is, there is a response right before the person dies of what's called before they have brain damage or heart damage, called a last gasp. And so your job is to have a tight-fitting mask on the face. And when that spasm breaks, it's almost like the spasm breaks because the nerves to the vocal cord can't have any spasm anymore. There you have no, and so it's the one chance you have, and you've got to get 100% oxygen in at that, because they'll often go into spasm again and have another last gasp. And so your job as an anesthesiologist is both very frightening and very scary. We call it a brown pants time, because literally you've got to have perfect airway at that time, holding the mouth and everything, and the way you hold the mouth and the mask on to get 100% oxygen in. You've got to have the ENT surgeon get the heck out of the way so you can hold the mask and get that last breath in. And whatever happened, I don't know whether they're fighting for the airway, meaning they're both trying to get at the airway at the same time, and thus he couldn't have a perfect mask in, or whether the last gasp just wasn't able to be ventilated, or whether her facial structures, due to all her facial surgery, prevented it. But in any way, they obviously did not succeed at getting those last gasps of breaths in successfully. So, Joe, that's what probably killed her. Now, the question is, was this just an error in judgment to do the extra step, or was this an appropriate step that should have been done and just not done perfectly? And or was there, in fact, a disagreement between the two docs, or was there even an anesthesiologist there working with him? Was it just two ENT surgeons? We don't know the answers to those questions.
So who's going to take the rap for that?
Say it again.
Who's going to take the rap for that?
Well, if it was an anesthesiologist and an ENT surgeon both at the same time, they will both share. New York has shared guilt, if you will, and I am sure their malpractice carrier. You just can't, I mean, even if things were done perfectly, there was an error in judgment, an error in skill, and so there will be, if there is a suit, they will be paying to the limits of their suit. If Even if everything was done perfectly, it's hard to imagine that it was done perfectly, because you always can get an airway in this time, day and age, if you've got the right equipment. So the question is, did they not have the right equipment? Were they fighting over the process? Did they not do things? You know, when you have VIPs there, you've got to really be strong-willed so you don't break and don't, if you will, so you do what is normal for people, anybody, and not doing things special because it's a VIP. And the question is, did they break their normal routine because this was a VIP? Was there not an anesthesiologist there? Was there not a skilled anesthesiologist there? Was there not the appropriate resuscitation and tracheostomy equipment there? Was the person helping them not skilled in a trach? There are all kinds of questions that are open. So you don't know why this happened, but it shouldn't happen ever.
Must be the most important person in that operating room, isn't it? It's got to be with the pressure and the way things can change. Stop on a dime. I mean, that position of anesthesiologist, I can't imagine the pressure and conducting what that person has to do.
Well, that's exactly right. They say anesthesia is moments of fear by hours of boredom. It's no longer that way anymore because things have gotten a lot faster. But it is moments of fear. And the ENT surgery, if they did a rigid, what we call rigid, which is a silver tube bronchoscopy, and didn't allow the anesthesiologist to have a tube in, the anesthesiologist still should have had a small fiber optic in that with a tube attached to it that he could have pushed past that lesion no matter what. And so, but if the surgeon, the outpatient office or wherever this was done, was not equipped with this type of equipment, then he should have never done it. Then there's outright malpractice. But in fact, we used to, when we were in training, say that ENT surgery, that is this type of surgery, is the most dangerous, the most risky, and was done. We only have young guys do this that is skilled, but they can't be in their 60s and 70s when you're an anesthesiologist, because those guys would have a heart attack during this cases. So it's the toughest cases to do.
Okay, udocs@gmail.com. If you smoke, you should not use salt. How come, Dr. Mike?
Well, this is a very interesting study. It was almost an accidental study, but they looked at patients who had rheumatoid arthritis, and they found out that there was a much higher incidence of, excess sodium in their diet. So this is a large study. I think it was something like 2,000 people with rheumatoid arthritis, and they examined and they said, what's in their diet that's different from all the other people? And they looked at it carefully, and it wasn't just sodium. It was a high sodium intake, and they got either, they smoked marijuana routinely, they smoked cigarettes routinely, and my guess is they could have been vaping as well, because it was nicotine plus the sodium. So it was nicotine plus high sodium diet more than doubles your risk of rheumatoid arthritis.
udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Guest time coming up, so stay with us and ask a question at udocs@gmail.com.
Although, Joe, we should also tell them the phone number.
Yes, 877-711-5211. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.